Murder. Ba-ba-da-ba. Welcome to Death Do Us Part podcast, hosted by my wife, Jamie.
Hello.
And myself, Mark. What up, y'all?
Hey.
What up? What the dealio?
All right, so let's just acknowledge it. We suck.
Yeah.
I figured out yesterday there's 336 hours in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay?
Like, in 14 days. I've been at work for 191 of them. So.
Yeah. You've been working a lot.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
So thank you guys for bearing with
and
us.
And being patient. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
This case.
This is a lot. This is a lot.
I can't stop.
Yeah. You keep, like, telling me.
Yeah.
I found more.
Yeah.
I found more.
Yes.
Okay. How much fucking more can you find?
It's fuckery. It is fuckery. And
so this might be more than three parts. This might be like a four or five part.
I am more obsessed with this than I was with JFK.
Really?
Yes. I know. And JFK, I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I cannot fucking stop.
Really?
Yeah. It's fuckery.
No shit.
Yeah. And at first I kept changing my mind, and now I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know. But there's a whole fucking lot. I don't know how many parts there's going to be.
Okay.
Because I don't know how long today is going to be. I literally just whipped out.
If it's going to be more than three parts, we will put in a Patreon in the middle.
Yeah. Well, okay. So they might just be long.
Oh, boy.
Parts. I just pulled out 57 pieces of notebook paper.
Yeah.
And I just got to
my eyes just fell out of my head.
Yeah. I was like, don't panic.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow.
So I will say it's going to be very timeline heavy.
Okay.
This particular part, because this part is the actual, like, this is when it happened.
Okay.
The reason it has to be so timeline heavy is because there's so many discrepancies with the times.
And a lot of names you said.
A lot too. Of names. Yeah. So I will, in the next couple days, I'll get you something to put up.
Okay.
Like, breaking everything down. But, the discrepancy in the times is important because this literally happened in probably a 10-minute span.
Okay.
And everybody's 10 minutes took place at a different time.
Oh.
So that's why there's a lot of discrepancies.
A lot of shenanigans.
Yes. When I get to, like, the actual, like, day that it happened, there's a couple people who were interviewed twice within a couple days. And within those 2 days, their stories changed.
Oh,
so I
God.
Try to keep those together so I'm not going completely back.
Yeah.
I touch a little bit on the crime scene, but I'll get really into the crime scene when it comes to the trial.
Okay.
Just because I think it's going to be easier at that point to follow it.
Right.
But it's fuckery. It's total fuckery.
It's going to be good, though.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
It's total fuckery.
Wow.
So.
Babe. R.I.P. Boiling Water. It will be missed.
I fucking hate you.
Oh,
I hate you.
You're welcome.
Jesus fucking Christ.
You are welcome.
I don't even know what to say to that. I don't.
You are welcome.
I don't even know what to say to that. Yeah, well.
So, I think because there's so much.
We just need to go.
We need to go.
And really, I've been at work for, you know,
yeah.
117 days in a row. I don't really have anything to chat about.
No.
I'm boring.
Yeah. I don't either.
Yeah. Uh-uh.
I don't either.
Yeah. I switch stations and have a different partner at work.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he has one leg.
Yeah, they know. Tank.
I call him Titty Stump because we have recently discovered that his stump feels like a titty.
That's so gross.
1,000% though. And I love the looks on because I make everybody come by and I'm like, come over here. And they're like, what? And I was like, can you grab his stump? And they're looking at me and I was like, I promise you this will be good. So they all, I'm like, what's that feel like to you? And they're like, and I'm like, feels like a titty, doesn't it? And it never failed. More than half of them were like, holy fuck, it feels like a titty. I was like, I told you.
That's great. That is great.
Yep. We were talking yesterday, and one of the guys came over and saw that I was on the phone. He's like, oh, my God, are you on the phone?
Yeah.
Because he came over like motherfucking Adam or something.
Right.
And I was like, I literally just used the term butt fucking in a sentence. I think you're okay right. to yell fuck when you come over here on the phone. Yeah. Yeah. That's where we're at.
Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. So we are doing the death. Mm-hmm. Of John O'Keefe and the trial of Karen Reed.
Ooh.
Everybody knows what this is.
Oh,
this is the Boston cop.
Boston.
I don't like her.
Really?
I don't like her. And that's fine. I don't have to like her. I don't think she gives a fuck if people like her. It doesn't change the outcome of what happened. I don't like her. She made a few comments. And I don't know if it's just because the whole Blue Line family and fire EMS, and I didn't like the comment that she made. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way, and I think that's why. But I'll throw the comments in.
Yeah.
They're just, and she wasn't trying to be like a dick face. She's not from like law enforcement family.
Off, right.
She's not from like an EMS family, and it just kind of
came off ugly.
It came off real ugly. You'll see when I get to it.
Okay.
I'm not taking my hat off because it's fabulous.
Yeah, so. It is.
Costco.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Go White Sox.
All right. So, this motherfucking thing is in my face.
The spit guard.
Okay. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
All right. John O'Keefe III was born December 8th, 1975, to parents John II and Margaret Peg O'Keefe. December 8th. That's Sam's birthday.
Oh, yeah.
It's also the day John Lennon was shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sam, your sister.
That's right. He had two siblings, an older sister by the name of Kristen and a younger brother named Paul. He was born and raised in Braintree, Massachusetts. I have to say Massachusetts a lot and it bothers me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you just say Mass?
I think I'm going to. That's all I wrote. I didn't write Massachusetts one fucking time.
Yeah, because that word alone, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So just say Mass.
So he graduated from Braintree High School. And then went to Northeastern University. From there, he got his master's in criminal justice from UMass Lowell. Hang on, I got an itch. He was an auxiliary police officer in Duxbury and Falmouth, I believe.
An auxiliary, so people realize it's kind of like a part-time cop. Like you're not full-time. You're doing another job with it, you know, and you'll work 2 to 3 days. And if there's like a special event, they'll call you in to work the special event, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Kind of like the bullshit details.
So at 29 years old in 2004, 2005-ish, he started with the Boston Police Department, ended up moving to Boston. And he was he worked at stations in Hyde Park, Dorchester, and then downtown Boston at one point.
Okay.
So in June of 2013, his sister, Kristen, was diagnosed with a very rare brain cancer. Glioblastoma is what it was called.
Yeah.
5 months later, she died.
Oh, my God. That's
five
terrible.
Months. Yeah. So John immediately made plans to move.
Yeah.
And he moved in with his brother-in-law. Her husband,
right,
Steve, to help him care for the then 6-year-old Kaylee and 3-year-old Patrick.
Oh, my God.
8 days after his sister died, John's partner and best friend takes his own life.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Mary and Joseph.
Who had a pregnant girlfriend at the time.
Oh, God.
She would say that John was right outside the delivery room when the baby was born, and he is the child's godfather.
Yeah, yeah.
It gets worse. January 12th of 2014, so now 3 months after his sister died, 2 months after his sister died.
Yeah.
His brother-in-law, Steve, dies of a massive heart attack.
What is going on?
So, Steve died of a broken heart.
Obviously.
So.
It's so true.
Yeah. Yeah, and it actually happens. It's a medical thing.
Yeah.
There are there's muscle structures in your heart that if you are too stressed and too emotional, they will snap.
Yeah.
So you do essentially die of a broken heart.
Right.
So.
Right.
Kaylee and Patrick, the niece and nephew, stayed with the grandparents for a short time, but then John decides that he's going to become the kid's guardian.
Oh, wow.
He's not married. He doesn't have any kids. Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah, good for him.
In towards the middle and ish of 2014, he moves to Canton, Massachusetts for the kids.
Okay.
He changed his position at the police department from a patrol job to a desk job because it had a more flexible schedule for the kids.
Yeah, I could see that.
So he started working in the Sex Offender Registry Information Unit at the A1 station in downtown Boston. So he's now at a desk job for the kids.
Yeah.
So this, you know, what, 39-year-old man takes custody of a fucking 6-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Oh, my God. God bless him.
They call them JJ. Yeah. They loved him. They thought it was great.
God bless him.
So in the spring of 2020, John ends up sending a Facebook message to an old girlfriend saying, "Hey, blast from the past, how's things?" That old girlfriend was Karen Reed. John and Karen had actually met in 2004 in Boston at a birthday party for his sister. Karen didn't know Kristen, but she had actually tagged along with a friend who grew up in the same town.
Yeah, yeah.
So they exchanged numbers, and then they did actually date for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Karen Reed was born in 1980 to parents William and Janet Reed. She had one brother by the name of Nathan. She was born in Massachusetts and raised in Troughton, Massachusetts, and then Blacksburg, Virginia. She graduated from Cole and Cassidy, which was a private Catholic high school in Towton. Followed by her bachelor's and master's in finance from Bentley University. So she was fucking smart.
Yeah.
After graduation, she became an adjunct professor of finance at Bentley University. So that just means like a part-time professor.
Right, right.
In 2007, she became an equity researcher and a financial analyst at Fidelity Investments and then settled in Mansfield, Massachusetts.
Mm.
When Karen and John dated in 2004, they were both trying to become established and kind of get their shit together, you know?
Yeah.
Life just kind of got in the way, and they more or less drifted apart more so than broke up. It's just kind of one of those things.
Yeah.
John was focused on his police career until the kids became his main focus, and Karen actually ended up in Dublin, Ireland for work for quite some time.
Oh, wow. Doing what?
Financial shit.
Wow.
Yeah. She then had to deal with very serious health issues. She ended up having 10 surgeries in 18 months.
Oh my gosh.
Which would lead to a diagnosis of severe Crohn's disease.
Ugh.
And she at one point ended up going through a period of blindness and then ended up with a colostomy bag.
Oh, that's terrible.
In her 20s. Like, can you fucking imagine? 20s and 30s, yeah.
How fucked up is that?
But less than a year after her last major surgery from the Crohn's, she was actually diagnosed with multiple sclerosis.
Oh, my God.
And we know how shitty that is. My mom has it.
Oh, yeah.
A close friend of mine has it, so
yeah.
We thought I had it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it seems like when John reached out in 2020, life was kind of starting to even out for the both of them. Karen would later say that she felt the life-altering events that they had both went through helped them form a deep bond. Another thing that helped them form a deep bond was COVID.
Oh, yeah.
The relationship progressed very quickly when the world shut down.
Yeah.
Now, Karen was working from home when COVID hit, so she was actually able to spend a lot of her time at John's house with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows first responders still had to go in. He was a first responder. He still had to go
in.
You
betcha.
She ended up rearranging her entire schedule to make sure that she was home with the kids for school. Via Zoom.
Wow.
And lunch.
Okay.
So it did progress quickly. I mean, what else are we going to do?
How can it not?
Yeah. Karen would go on to say that John eventually became critical of her childcare decisions. Karen felt and would say that John resented her relationship with the kids. She got to be the fun one.
Yeah.
John had to be the disciplinarian. There was one point where the kids went out of town with their grandparents for a couple days and came home, and Karen was the first one they hugged.
Oh.
So, John strikes me, just from what everybody says about him, he's, I don't know, us?
Yeah.
Like, he's from that generation that, you're a hard ass, you push it down, you don't really deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
He never really grieved for his sister.
Right.
He kept it inside. Even Karen said he never really properly grieved for his sister, so he was struggling with that. In addition to the kids,
right?
They're growing up. They're starting to go through puberty. They lost both their parents tragically within 6 months. It's a lot.
Right.
It's a lot. So Karen ended up trying to take the kids to therapy. And this is just kind of solidifies what I said. John put a stop to it when the therapist tried to involve board games.
Okay.
So Karen says, quote, "I think it's part of his stock. This Irish Catholic south of Boston, rub some dirt on it, drink through your problems mindset."
That's us.
Yes. Yes.
To a T.
That, except the south of Boston.
Right.
That's the only difference.
We don't park our cars in the garage.
Right. I would go to Boston.
I'm sorry, Boston people.
It's okay. I hate them too, guys. So Karen started to feel like John was actually taking advantage of her when it came to the kids.
Okay.
Like, you watch them.
Yeah.
You know. So New Year's Eve of 2021 into 2022, there was a huge group trip to Aruba. And John ended up going. It was John, Karen, and the kids.
God, I want to go there so bad.
It was like 70 fucking people that went.
Dude.
Yeah.
I want to go so bad.
Yeah. So John would drink all day and all night and not come back to the room till like 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
Karen described it as sun up to man down. You start drinking when the sun comes up until you fall down and you're done.
Right.
To which I say, let's do this.
Let's do it. Challenge accepted. Right.
So on actual New Year's Eve, the couple argued in front of the kids after Karen sees what she thinks is John kissing a friend's sister.
Ooh.
They end up getting into it, like, in the hotel lobby.
Yeah.
So John denies it was a kiss, and so does the other chick. She's like, listen, he was drunk, he fell, and I pointed him to the direction of the room.
Yeah.
Karen came around the corner right as it happened, yelling, who the fuck is this?
Oh, okay.
So he's like, listen, it's my buddy's sister. Like,
turned,
you know, it's
into
not a big
the
deal.
Maury show.
Yeah, and she tried to introduce herself to Karen, and Karen didn't say something, or she said something not very nice to her, and the chick's like, well, fuck you too.
Right.
Like, go, you know, whatever. So 2 days later, texts to others on the trip showed that the couple are still fighting over this. You know, they were getting, like, private cabanas, and one of the girls was like, are you coming? And he's like, well, we're still fucking fighting.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, now, I will say, we have the advantage of hindsight. Okay. Mm.
Yeah.
Couples fight.
Right.
Couples fight on vacation.
Yeah.
And when you bring your kids on vacation, not, like it or not, and people can get pissed at me all they want, it falls back on mom 90% of the time.
Yeah.
You're not on vacation. You're mom in a different country.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah, you're doing mom duty.
Couples fight. And so the vast majority of the people will say that they didn't seem to fight any more than normal couples. Mm-hmm. Did they fight a little bit dirtier? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't astronomical. They weren't like beating the shit out of each other. They right. weren't fighting every single day. Like,
yeah.
it is what it is, yeah. you know? So they end up leaving Aruba early on January 5th. On January 12th, here's where the names start coming in. Okay. January 12th of 2022, Karen sends a text message to Brian Higgins for the first time after getting his number from a friend.
Ooh, who is he?
Well, he plays a big part.
Ooh.
She said, quote, I knew Higgins found me attractive. It helped me emotionally validate myself, which is embarrassing to admit. Brian Higgins is an agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives.
Mm-hmm.
And him and John actually hung out in very similar circles in the same bars.
Ooh.
So Higgins was working with the ATF, but he had an office at the Canton Police Department. So that's how they were hanging out together, which is common.
That's
we know that's common.
Yeah.
Other people may not. That's what,
yeah.
It's very common. So Higgins, and I'm going to call him Higgins the whole time because mm-hmm. there's another Brian who's as equally as important as he is.
Okay.
So one's Brian, one's Higgins, okay?
Okay.
So Higgins would later testify that he knew John for about a year and would see him at the Hillside Pub in Canton. He would say, quote, I considered him a friend. I considered her a friend as well. So Karen texted Higgins, you're hot. And he replied with, are you serious or are you messing with me? And she said, no, I'm serious. Higgins would say that the feelings were mutual. And
you hot, girl.
You hot. And he asks how long that she's thought that way. The two would continue to exchange quote-unquote flirty texts.
Mm-hmm.
They're not so much flirty as I would like to fucking punch both of them in the face because they're irritating.
Right.
It's like they're play argue. I don't even know how to, like, I read most of them.
Like high school shit?
Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah.
It's like, woe is me, woe is me. I think you're hot. I think you're hot. Do you want to come over? Woe is me.
You're
shut
fat,
the
girl.
P-H-A-T. Like, I was getting annoyed by these text messages. Yeah. And, like, I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, if I was her, his text would piss me off. If yeah. I was him, her text would piss me off. And I would just stop talking.
Right. Fuck this.
Yeah. I was like, this is stupid. Now, on January 15th, Higgins would go to John's house to watch a New England Patriots game. As he was leaving, Karen kissed him.
Ooh.
She walked him outside. Higgins said she, quote, planted a kiss on me, not like a friend. He interpreted this as a, quote, romantic kiss. Karen then texted Higgins, quote, I'm glad you came over tonight. And she also texted that her relationship with John had, quote, deteriorated and that he had, quote, hooked up with another girl on vacation. That was the kiss she thought she saw.
Yeah.
So, and then she, like, she contradicts herself a lot talking to him. I told you I kind of want to slap her.
Yeah.
On January 16th, so between January 16th and January 23rd, at some point between these 2 days, Karen went to Higgins' house.
Yeah.
They met to discuss the possibility of a relationship.
Ooh.
They had one drink and no intimate contact, per the both of them. Now, she was, like, begging him to come to her house, though, because I don't know if a lot of people realize this. I didn't. I thought Karen and John lived together.
Yeah.
For the most part, they do. She stays there all the time. But she still has her own house in Mansfield.
Oh.
So she never sold it, you know.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. She texted Higgins about John not being able to handle the kids with the issues and the situation. And said that his heart just wasn't in it. She said that she tries hard with the kids, but they are spoiled and not hers. And her parents say that she'd feel differently if they were hers.
How can you not spoil them, though?
Right.
Look at the shit. Yeah, look at the shit they've been through.
Yeah. She would say, quote, I never got married, and now somehow I'm arguing with someone about raising kids. She was pissed that she spent New Year's Eve with the kids and not him because he was out getting shit-faced in Aruba.
Yeah.
And she said, quote, it shouldn't be my role. Then she said she has more issues, like the issues with the kids bother her more than him possibly cheating.
Wow.
Yeah. Which okay. I don't believe you.
Yeah.
She would go on to say that there was a difference between dating and being married and that her and John had no intention of ever getting married. The point, she would say, quote, the point of dating is not to get tied down if you're not confident you should be. And then she said, quote, if he is seeing someone else, I wouldn't want to know either way. He probably feels the same way. Aruba says that's a lie.
Right.
Yeah. You flipped your fucking shit.
Yeah, you went ape shit.
And she constantly accuses him towards the end of seeing another woman.
Okay.
But it never comes out if he was actually cheating.
Right.
So there's really no way to know. But then she says that John likes Higgins, and Higgins says John's, quote, a good dude. She says, yeah, he is. Then stop talking to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello.
Then she says, it's not that she's not happy per se. She's just realistic.
Okay.
Then she texts him. Put a pin in this.
Okay.
This is what made me go, oh, part of it. She sends Higgins a text that says, quote, John has showed me about 5 times the ring video of me walking you out on Saturday. And my voice and my accent are killing me softly. And Higgins responds with, quote, what? Ooh. And she says, quote, yeah, he has cameras everywhere. You cops. He says, Jesus, I don't want to get caught up in any drama.
Yeah.
And she says, right? He's like, Christ, are you guys hooking up? So at some point very shortly prior to this event,
yeah,
John found out.
Yeah.
John found out. What she said to him about what happened, I don't know, but
yeah.
John found out.
Damn.
So she was repeatedly, like I said, inviting him over even after this.
Right.
To her, quote, property in Mansfield.
Ooh. Yeah. I don't know if I like this chick already.
So I got to be honest with you. I don't like any of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we are at January 28th of 2022. This is going to be pretty time heavy.
Okay.
And I'm going to try and explain who the people are, kind of short but sweet, so you can kind of see where everybody's at. Okay.
Okay.
So that morning, John and Karen exchanged texts after a morning argument. They got into an argument about what she served the kids for breakfast.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Now, I want to remind people, too, this is towards the end of COVID.
Right.
Everybody has been locked in the house.
Going crazy.
Everybody wants to fucking choke everybody.
Right.
I don't care how fucking in love with you in love with your significant other you were, or how much you love your kids.
Oh, you're going
you
crazy.
You wanted to fucking murder them.
Yeah.
The only saving grace in this house was I had to leave.
Yeah.
I had to go to work.
You had to work.
Thank God.
Yeah.
We would have killed each other.
Oh, we so, like, absolutely would have.
I'm not surprised that people are still fighting over fucking breakfast. Yeah. Like, you know, they're locked in the fucking house with each other.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. So at 9:49, Karen texts John, quote, "You have really hurt me this time." At 1:47, John asks Karen when she's coming to visit him, because again, they don't live together. She said that she's still upset about the argument and she doesn't know. And then Karen asked John if he's, quote, "interested in someone else." John's reply was, quote, "Things haven't been great between us for a while because of COVID."
Yeah.
Karen repeatedly calls throughout the afternoon. Now, this is why I would choke the bitch. Stop fucking calling me. Right. If I don't answer the first time, assume I'm not going to answer times 2 through 27.
Right.
Just make that assumption. Right. Stop calling me.
I do that to you.
I tried to do it to you last night and piss you off, and I was like, you fucking fell asleep, and it doesn't even bother
you. I fell asleep. I'm not going to hear the phone.
But, like, she calls. And I don't like to talk on the fucking phone anyways.
Right.
Stop calling me. Stop fucking calling me. I will turn my phone into a fucking frisbee. Stop calling me.
Right.
So he doesn't answer, but he does text her that he's busy with his family. His family over.
Yeah.
He again invites her over, and she declines, saying that she doesn't want to be around his family. Mm. At 3 o'clock, he finally calls her back. So now we're talking, like, he sends her a text at 10 to 2.
Yeah.
She calls him like 17 fucking times between that and 3 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
Bitch, I'll invite you over just to slap you.
You got that right.
I will choke the shit out of you.
You got that right, dude.
I, by the way, may or may not have threatened to cunt punt somebody with my partner's leg the other day.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Oh, I could see that happening.
I was mad.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
So, that evening. All right, here's more names. You ready?
Yeah.
Brian Higgins, Brian Albert, he's the other Brian that will be just Brian, Kevin Albert, and Eddie Hernandez returned from New York City, where they attended a line of duty death funeral for a New York officer.
Okay.
All right. Kevin Albert. He is one of 6 Albert siblings. He is the brother of Chris and Brian Albert. He's also a detective with the Canton Police Department.
Okay.
So this is where the ties start coming in, too.
Okay.
Brian Albert, he's a lifelong Canton resident. He lives in and owns the home at 34 Fairview Road. From here on out, 34 Fairview Road will be called Fairview.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'm saying 34 Fairview Road.
Yeah, that's
137 motherfucking times.
That's too much.
It was actually his parents' house, and then him and his wife and kids moved in.
Okay.
Now, he is a Boston police sergeant with the Fugitive Apprehension Team. He helped with the capture of the Boston Strangler and the Craigslist Killer.
Oh, wow.
And do you remember back in like 2013, 2014, Boston's Finest?
Yeah.
Okay, so he was in it. He was in it.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was in it, and so was John's former partner.
I do remember that. Wow.
John's partner that killed himself was on the show, too.
Oh, Jesus.
So Brian would later testify at one point that he didn't know John well.
Yeah.
None of them say the same thing twice.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Now, Brian Albert is good friends with Brian Higgins, whose office is at Canton PD.
Okay.
So after a little bit, Brian Albert, who will just be Brian from here on out, leaves to go to Waterfalls Bar to meet his wife, Nicole, and daughter, Caitlin, and he invites Higgins. 15 minutes after Brian leaves, Higgins also leaves. Around this time, John and his nephew Patrick go to D&E's Pizza. This restaurant is owned by Chris Albert,
Oh,
who
boy.
Is one of the Albert brothers.
Jesus.
Yes. Now, I say this like three times in here. Massachusetts State Police did not record any interviews for 21 months through this entire investigation.
That blows my mind.
They ended up recording a singular interview, and it was 19 months in, and it wasn't even the entire interview.
That blows my mind. I would expect so much better from them because they're such a good department.
It's so bad.
Like, that just
the corruption with Massachusetts State Police.
Yeah.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Our next case might be another state police.
Oh,
right,
really?
Outside of Canton. Yeah.
No,
oh, yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
Okay. You're so, going to have to tell me about that.
Chris Albert is also a lifelong Canton resident. He is the brother of Kevin and Brian. He also serves on the Canton Selectmen Board. The Selectmen Board, which I've never heard of.
Never.
It's a group of elected officials who manage a town's day-to-day operations and oversee the community welfare.
I mean, isn't that what you have a mayor for and trustees?
Maybe they're like the trustees. That's kind of the gist that I got.
Okay.
Is that they're kind of like the trustees.
Okay.
So he is married to Julie, and their son is Colin.
Mm-hmm.
Colin's going to come up a lot.
Oh.
They're also they're neighbors with John.
Oh, okay? Wow. Okay.
Now,
Holy shit.
I touch on it a little bit later. There's allegedly some issues between Colin and John over walking in the grass. And John's very much a
get off my lawn
guy. Yes. So Chris ends up inviting John to Waterfalls Bar later with him and his family. At 6:44, John texts Karen that both kids are now with friends and that he's going to CF McCarthy's with friend Michael Camerano, to celebrate Kaylee and Michael's daughter getting into Bishop Feenan High School. It's like a Chicago thing where
with the Catholic schools.
There are some friends that I have to leave out.
Yeah, that's fine. There's already so many fucking people.
Dude, that's not even all of them.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
So John invites Karen to join them. At 7:24, Karen texts John back that she's having issues with her water heater, and she texted her neighbor to come look at it. John responds to just meet him, have the water heater looked at later, or he would look at it later.
Yeah.
Because everybody who knows an Irish cop or fireman, somebody in the family knows how to do plumbing.
Oh, yeah.
Someone in the family knows how to do
carpentry?
Electric.
Like,
you need something done? Find a fireman or a cop.
Yep.
I need my brakes done? I'm asking a guy at the firehouse.
Yep.
So that's just how it works.
Right.
So then he texts her, "Hope your plumber buddy you texted is hot." Because that's a very appropriate response.
Right.
That's exactly what I would fucking say. Karen ended up waiting anyways. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Here's where the discrepancies start.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to try to break this down.
Okay.
Multiple statements with conflicting statements are given.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple interviews are done, but dated and turned in at a later time.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Nicole Albert, who is the wife of Brian Albert, was interviewed on February 3rd. But her report was dated for February 23rd and turned in on the same day.
Yeah.
Jen McCabe gave an interview on January 29th that was not dated or turned in until April 6th.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That wasn't like uncalled for.
It gets
for
worse.
My department. Like, we would do that too sometimes. But like the task force, you had, like, that day you did an interview.
I feel like,
you had,
given the circumstances of this case, it should not have happened. Not that long.
That's what I'm saying. No,
a couple days.
Not even a couple days. Like I said, the task force, you couldn't leave. You know, if everyone broke, if you were still doing a report, it needed to be done.
The people whose reports were dated and turned in months later are like the meat and potatoes of the case.
Oh, man.
So Jen McCabe was also interviewed on February 1st.
No.
Julie and Chris Albert were interviewed together.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
On February 10th, and that report was dated and turned in on February 21st.
You never do.
Oh, just wait.
Interviews together.
Hold on to your butt, my dude, because this is going to get,
this is going to piss me off.
As a cop, you're going to be like, mom.
Right. This is bullshit.
Brian Albert was interviewed on January 29th, and his report was dated and turned in on April 7th.
Oh, man.
Matt McCabe was interviewed. He is the husband of Jen McCabe. He was also interviewed on January 29th, and his report was dated and turned in on April 7th.
That's way too fucking long.
Okay. Now, way too long. Some of the things, some of the discrepancies could literally just be human error.
Yeah.
But I feel like you should proofread a little more.
Yeah. On a case like this. Yeah.
It's a cop. It's a dead cop with other cops.
Right.
Like, you would think that the cops working the case would be like, cross your T's, dot your I's, wipe your ass, like, make sure everything is good.
Yeah. So, it needs to be on point.
Yeah. Okay. So at 7:30, Nicole Albert meets her sister-in-law, Julie Albert, and her daughter, Caitlin, and Caitlin's boyfriend, Tristan, at Waterfalls. Now, Nicole's statement actually read, she went to meet her sister, Julie, and her daughter, Tristan, and Tristan's boyfriend. So they didn't even get the fucking people right.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Right.
Yeah. Brian's statement says that he and his wife, Nicole, arrived at Waterfalls at 10 o'clock to meet friends.
Don't go chasing them, by the way. I had to. I'm sorry.
I legit fucking hate you right now. So, okay. So, we know that at 7:30, Nicole meets her sister-in-law, Julie. Now, Brian says later that him and his wife, Nicole, arrived at Waterfalls at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So, he's saying they didn't even show up together. This is the day after.
Okay.
The day after he's saying this.
Okay.
Okay? All right. Nicole would say that she knew John, but only met him in social settings a few times. She was aware that he had recently moved close to sister-in-law, to her sister, Jen McCabe. She also knew him as Kaylee's uncle. A lot of them did. A lot of them had kids around the same age. So she didn't know Karen and had never met her. Julie Albert is Chris Albert's wife. And they state that as a couple, they knew John for about 4 to 5 years. They were neighbors. Like, the two of them would house sit for John if he went out of town, stuff like that.
Yeah.
She would later say that she only met Karen once, but then her testimony changes.
Oh.
So in a statement, she says she only met Karen once, but she testifies later. She then would say that she considered Karen an acquaintance and John was her actual friend.
Okay.
It's not even close to what she says testifying later.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
This is so fucked.
At 7:37, John and Michael arrive at CF McCarthy's, which is very close to Waterfalls. All these bars are in, like, think 111th.
Yes.
In Beverly. Yes. That's what Canton is like.
Yeah. 111th and Western.
Yeah. So at 8:35, Karen texts John that she is on her way from her Mansfield house to meet him. At approximately 8:45, Julie texts John that everyone is at Waterfalls and he needs to come up here. So these guys all hang out together. This is not uncommon.
Right.
Okay. At 8:51, Karen arrives at McCarthy's. Surveillance video shows John greeting Karen and trying to kiss her, like kiss her cheek.
Yeah.
And I don't think she like brushed him off. I think she's like, I'm going to get a fucking drink. And kind of turned her head at the same time.
Right, right.
John stands up and offers her his seat. She stands, so does he. They're very affectionate at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everybody says that. Everybody would later say they were very affectionate at the bar. They were not fighting at the bar.
Yeah.
Everybody was having a great time, you know, and nothing seemed off.
Yeah.
Everybody also said that neither one of them seemed overly intoxicated.
Okay.
And you see the surveillance video of the bar.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. Yeah, that's sure. That's how it goes. That's how our nights out were, you know?
Right.
So Karen gets her first drink, which is a clear drink with a lime. She then has 7 drinks in total, including shots. So she is given
shot.
So we have times of them, but.
Okay.
Which kind of comes into play later a little bit. But so she has 7 drinks at McCarthy's.
Okay.
Okay. Whatever. I mean, she's she's a little chick.
Yeah, so it's going to affect you.
She said that the two of them had been drinking a lot on weekends lately, and she doesn't appear overly drunk because there's surveillance video of all this.
Yeah.
So I don't think she was like a lightweight, you know?
She was used to it. She was tolerant.
Right. So at 9 o'clock, Higgins, Jen McCabe, and her husband, Matt McCabe, along with a few others, other friends, arrive at Waterfalls. Okay. Jen McCabe, she becomes huge.
Yeah.
In this.
Okay.
She is Nicole Albert's sister. She lives close to John and knows John because her daughter is friends with his niece, Kaylee. Matt McCabe is Jen McCabe's husband. Said him and his wife have known John for about 8 years. The couple would say that John encouraged Jen to become friends with Karen because they both suffer from MS.
Oh, okay.
At 10 o'clock, Brian Albert arrives at Waterfalls. According to Nicole's statement, Brian was returning from a funeral and meeting them out. That was at her February 1st interview.
Yeah.
According to Brian's statement, he arrived at Waterfalls with Nicole.
Oh.
She was already there.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Again, none of these are recorded, so it's unknown if they were asked any further questions.
Oh,
like,
my God, how do you not record them?
Because it's literally the same day that this whole event fucking happened.
Yeah.
And the husband is saying he went with the wife, and the wife was like, no, we were there for like 4 fucking hours before he got there.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. At 10:30, Colin Albert arrives at Fairview Road to celebrate Brian Albert Jr.'s birthday. Thank God Brian Albert Jr. does not come in here a lot because I don't want to say that.
Right.
At 10:40, Karen leaves McCarthy's with a glass in her right hand, which I think is fucking hilarious. They all end up leaving with drinks in their hands to go to another bar.
Hey, why not, man?
At 10:41, Julie sends John another text. And then says in her statement that John and Karen arrive shortly after.
Yeah.
At 10:54, John and Karen walk into Waterfalls. Karen does have a drink or a glass in her right hand. And Jen and Julie both note the drink in their statements that she walked in. Everybody comments that she had a drink in her hand when she walked in, and they thought it was funny.
Right.
Now, during Karen's interview on January 29th, Karen denies having a drink in her hand. She is also seen on the video having more drinks than remembered. Mm. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So she had a night out at the bar.
Right. Okay.
Now, in the same interview, she said that she dropped John off later and did a 3-point turn. The only reason I mention that is because she is the first one to mention a 3-point turn.
Oh.
There's no evidence of a 3-point turn at the scene.
All right.
Okay. Another friend, Karina, said Karen was complaining about John's mom and their lack of private time and vacations, because of the kids, the activities and responsibilities.
Yeah.
Again, I don't find that abnormal in any fucking way.
No.
And the more she drinks, the more she's going to bitch.
The more she's going to come out.
Yeah. Like, you think I'm loud and abrasive? Oh, this fucking man. Broad. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, everybody noted that there were no fights or tension amongst anybody. There were no signs of John or Karen being overly intoxicated. Now, while at Waterfalls, Higgins sends Karen a quote-unquote flirty text.
Oh, boy.
It says, well. That's what it says.
Well.
Karen does not respond.
Yeah.
Did John see that?
Yeah.
So, shortly after John and Karen arrive, Julie Albert leaves with a migraine. It is important to remember that.
Okay.
Because she is actually listed by one of the police officers as being in the Fairview home later.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
At 11:54, Colin texts Allison McCabe, who is Jen McCabe's daughter, for a ride home from the Alberts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they grew up together. They're not cousins, but they grew up together. They're friends.
Okay.
And then I put...
Play cousins.
I have questions.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he just ask his parents for a ride home?
Yeah. Why wouldn't he?
The bar's 7 minutes away.
Yeah.
The bar from where they're at is 7 minutes away. Okay?
Yeah.
My next question. Allison didn't come inside the house.
Yeah.
To pick up Colin.
Right.
She's actually related to Brian Albert Jr. That is her cousin. Oh. But she doesn't go in to say hi.
Yeah, that's weird. That's weird.
I think, you know how they say go for the weakest link?
Yeah.
I think it's her.
You're probably right.
I think it's her.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're into January 29th, technically. At midnight, Brian and Nicole Albert, Jen and Matt McCabe, and Higgins all leave Waterfalls. Julie Nagel calls her brother Ryan for a ride home from the Alberts. This is a friend of Brian Albert Jr.'s who was there celebrating his birthday. Julie Nagel doesn't have a horse in this race. Her brother doesn't have a horse in this race. Just throwing that out there.
Okay.
There's no ties.
Okay.
Chris Albert says everyone is leaving and he's getting ready to leave the bar and he's talking to the band. At, I almost said midnight 10. At 12:10 a.m., Brian and Nicole Albert arrive at home. Allison arrives to pick up Colin, says that she sees Brian and Nicole and says goodbye.
Yeah.
I'll touch on this later too. Nicole later says that they walk into the front door and they see Colin getting ready to leave. Colin later testifies that he left out the side door.
Ooh.
I had to make sure Mark's following along here.
Yeah.
We had to pause
for a second.
So if Colin left out the side door, he's not going to see Brian and Nicole.
Right.
Okay. And Allison and Brian and Nicole can't say where they saw each other. Allison didn't go in the house, but she says she saw Brian and Nicole. Did you see him in the driveway?
Yeah.
They never say.
Okay.
Okay. Now, it's important to note, too, that no one actually saw Colin leaving the house.
Really?
Nobody in any statement or any testimony saw Colin leaving the house.
Yeah.
Okay. It's also important to know that Colin is not listed in any police reports as being there.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay.
Everybody just sees Colin waiting for a ride.
Yeah.
It is speculated by some later that he just went down to the basement.
Hmm.
Okay. So Karen leaves Waterfalls with two females.
Okay.
1 minute later at 12:11, John leaves Waterfalls with a cocktail glass in his right hand.
Yes.
Okay. Now, Boston and the Boston area is expecting the biggest nor'easter blizzard that they have seen in decades.
I think I remember this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Decades.
Right.
This is going to be the end all fucking be all snowstorm.
Right. Yeah. I think I remember this.
Obviously, you go and get shit faced.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Why fucking wouldn't you? Buy toilet paper? Yeah. So it is just starting to snow at this time. There is a very light covering on the ground.
Okay.
Chris Albert states that the only people left in the bar is him and four band members.
Rock and roll, dude.
Now, Jen McCabe, according to her January 29th interview, Brian Albert invited the entire group that was at the bar to come back to his house to celebrate Junior's birthday.
Wow.
In her February 1st interview,
yeah,
okay, she invited John and Karen to the Albert's house.
Okay.
Now, Brian Albert, according to his January 29th interview, he didn't know John and Karen were coming to the house, but stated they would have been welcome if they did. He just wasn't aware.
Yeah.
According to, there is a Canton police sergeant by the name of Michael Link. He becomes very prominent in this too.
Oh, boy.
According to his report, so there's interviews and then there's reports. You know that.
Yeah.
According to his report, Brian and Nicole both recall John and Karen being welcome to come over, but never arriving.
Hmm.
So did you ask him or did you not?
Yeah.
Okay. So now I put on here, the times of texts and events vary by report. I will get into the phones, everybody's phone records later.
Okay.
Now, the initial statements and reports.
That's going to be a fucking headache, well, man.
There's issues with the reports being pulled and how they were pulled. And so times kind of seem off a little bit at first.
Okay.
We come to find out when they start trying to dump phones.
Yeah.
One of the investigators is only getting warrants and, search warrants and shit like that.
Yeah.
For Android phones.
Oh, yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah, because none of them have Androids.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Yeah. So at 12:14, John texts Jen asking where to go. She texts back 34 Fairview Road with directions. Chris leaves Waterfalls, according to surveillance video, at this time and walks home. He will go on to say, him and his wife will go on to say that he left at 12:05, between 12:05 and 12:10, and he walked home.
Okay.
Video shows him leaving at 12:14. Ooh. It becomes an issue during the trial.
Yeah.
In the initial statement from Chris and Julie, because they were interviewed together.
Yeah.
They went to the Alberts.
Oh.
They then changed their story to they went home.
Of course.
They then changed it again to Julie went home early with a migraine.
Oh my God. Come on.
Again, Sergeant Link has both of them listed at the Alberts after midnight. At 12:15, according to Sergeant Link's report, Caitlin Albert is picked up from 32 Fairview Road by boyfriend Tristan. Now, the two of them were just listed at the bar together.
Yeah.
What? Why? Why would he have to pick her up?
Right.
We know she drove home with her parents, allegedly.
Yeah, exactly.
And they got home at like 10 after. So why is he picking her up 5 minutes later when they just left the bar together? They left the Alberts left the bar at 11:58.
Yeah.
According to Link's report, Tristan shows up at 12:15 to pick up his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Why didn't she just get in the fucking car with him?
Right. Right. What?
Other statements have Caitlin being picked up later.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, much later. Between 12:15 and 12:17, Karen's SUV is seen on surveillance footage driving past Canton Library, then Temple Beth Abraham. At 12:18, John calls Jen for more specific directions because John's kind of newer to Canton.
Yeah.
Karen doesn't live in Canton and she's driving.
Right.
At the same time, 12:18, John and Matt McCabe arrive at the Alberts. Matt would later testify that it was 12:20. That's not really a big discrepancy.
Okay.
Higgins then texts John, "Where you at?"
Ooh. Ooh. Yeah. Okay.
I will do cell phone location and data later because I will say the prosecution comes out and says it's bullshit.
Yeah.
That, you know, John's phone data isn't accurate, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
A bit of a spoiler alert. The FBI comes out and says, fuck you, it is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So at 12:19, John's cell location shows him on Dedham Street. 34 Fairview Road is then put into the Waze navigation app. And then Karen drives past Fairview Road, does a 3-point turn, and ends up on Cedar Crest Road.
Okay. Okay.
So the Higgins text,
yeah.
He would later testify to the grand jury that he didn't know that Karen and John were coming back to Fairview.
Okay.
You're with everybody that said he is.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. So at 12:24, Ryan Nagel is arriving to pick up his sister, Jewelry. Julie.
Yeah, jewelry.
Jewelry. The group that arrives has no ties to John, Karen, the Alberts, or the McCabes.
Yeah.
His friend is driving a gray Ford F-150. Ryan is in the front seat, and his girlfriend, Heather Maxson, is in the back seat.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan states he saw a black SUV approaching from the opposite direction from Cedar Crest Road, which is matching with the Waze app.
Right.
Okay. They turned onto Fairview Road after the SUV. The truck then parked in front of the house. The SUV parked in front of the property on the opposite side of the street. So they're coming from opposite directions.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Ryan parks in front of the house. The SUV parks on the other side.
Okay. Yeah, I'm following.
At the same time, 12:24, according to John Sell, he, and assumably Karen, because she was driving, arrives at the Alberts.
Yeah.
Okay. Julie then comes outside to talk to Ryan because she said, you know, she decided to stay longer and she's probably just going to spend the night. Now, she would later state that she saw the SUV prior to coming outside, But by the time she got outside to talk to Ryan, the SUV was gone.
Yeah.
She invites the group in. Heather says it's too late, and they leave. Mm-hmm. Ryan says this whole exchange was approximately 5 minutes. He then says he sees the SUV move up and park by a flagpole in front of the Alberts home, which is 34 Fairview Road. He doesn't think it's in park because the taillights are illuminated.
Okay.
He also does not notice any significant damage to the taillight.
Yeah.
Okay. He's looking at the taillight enough to know that they're on.
Yeah.
He doesn't see significant damage.
Okay.
He sees a female in the driver's seat whose hands are at 10 and 2 with the interior light on. He says he only saw one person in the vehicle. One singular source said Heather would later say that she saw a male and female in the car, but I couldn't find another source.
Yeah, okay.
All three of them state that they saw no damage whatsoever to the SUV.
Hmm.
Now we're getting multiple statements from Jem McCabe.
Yeah.
Okay. In five statements.
Oh, Jesus.
She says that while she was inside, she observes a black SUV from the front door. In one statement, she says someone told her there was a car outside and she saw the SUV in front of the house.
Yeah.
In one statement to Sergeant Good with Canton Police, which was never brought up again. It was mentioned one time, never brought up again.
Oh, boy.
She saw the passenger door of the SUV open, but neither Karen nor John came in. And then the SUV drove off and she did not see anything in the snow.
Okay.
Okay. Multiple statements say that she assumed the SUV she saw, however she fucking saw it because she can't make up her fucking mind,
yeah,
was Karen and John, so she sent John multiple text messages. She sent messages starting at 12:27 that said, here. At 12:31, hello, pull behind me. She sent more messages at 12:40, 12:42, and 12:45. In one statement, she says she looked out the front door after every text and could see the SUV. She saw the SUV move further up the street three times, yeah, and with the last text she sent, she looked outside and it was gone. She made another statement to Sergeant Mullaney of the Canton Police Department that John and Karen were invited, but they never arrived.
Yeah.
She also said, in the same motherfucking breath, that Karen dropped John off between midnight and 1 a.m.
Hmm. Okay.
How do you know that?
Yeah.
Now, in all of these statements, she at one point, or at no point, did she mention the truck in front of the house. She would have had to look past the truck,
yeah,
to see the SUV.
She would have had to.
There's no way around it. She would have had to.
Yeah.
It's a giant F-150.
How can you miss it?
It was gray. It's not like it was white. Not that white would blend in with the snow. But
right. You're still going to see, yeah, it.
Matt McCabe also gives multiple statements.
Oh, boy.
In two statements, he observed the SUV pull up in front of the house and then move to the edge of the property. In one statement, he observed the SUV pull up to the edge of the property, then drive off in the direction it was facing. He never saw a three-point turn. But in his January 29th interview, he said he saw tracks in the snow consistent with a three-point turn.
Yeah.
He saw tracks, but no body.
Okay.
It will be alleged that this is when Karen hit John with her vehicle.
Okay.
Doing a three-point turn.
Right, right. Okay.
He also never mentioned seeing the F-150.
Now, that's weird.
The F-150 has nothing to do with any of these families.
Yeah, but you're
dude
still
came to pick up his. So it's not like they're trying to keep somebody off the scene,
right,
in that truck. Like, dude, right, came to pick up his sister.
Right.
You know? So then I forgot my notebook. Hang on. Let me look it up.
Okay. What do you got to look up?
PCA.
PCA?
Yeah. Nope, that's not right.
I'm just thinking of dirty words in
just
my
stop
head.
hang on. PCA, maybe court? I had it written down and I forgot.
Oh my God, how did you forget? you only have 102 pages.
And I have like 17 different notebooks.
Oh my God.
So it's, oh God. It's, so they have a PCA and then a statement of case.
Okay.
Maybe if I look it up that way.
Google, help.
I'm on Google.
Help me, Google. Awkward silence.
I know. Can you, like...
Yeah. So, Jamie has...
You're so fucking bad at this.
Jamie
has
102 pages, but forgets a fucking notebook. Oh, my God. How fucking terrible.
I'm gonna fucking... I will cunt-punt you with Adam's fucking leg. So, I'll find the exact meaning. But the PCA and the statement of case, it's almost like a consolidation of everybody's reports.
Okay. So, you'll bring your notebook. You'll find your notebook next time.
Find it.
Right.
Yeah. So, it's important to note the PCA and the statement of case because it takes bits and pieces from everybody's interview and kind of puts them together in different ways.
Okay.
And then things are worded different between the two of them.
Okay.
So according to the PCA and Jen McCabe's January 29th interview, the SUV was parked on the street at the driveway entrance. She saw the SUV at 12:31 and texted John, "Hello, pull up behind me." She then observed the SUV move along the left side of the street, sent John a text saying, "Where are you?" She called John multiple times, but denied doing it, stating she believed these happened when she was putting her phone in her pocket. This group of people are the king and queens of motherfucking butt dials.
Yeah. Right?
King and queen. I have not done so many butt dials in my entire motherfucking life.
Right.
And I'm a fucking idiot.
Right.
Okay? At 12:30, Allison McCabe arrives home. Allegedly.
Okay. Allegedly.
She is the one who picked up Colin. Okay? She says that she picked up Colin and went straight to bed after dropping Colin off.
Yeah.
However, Colin didn't get home until like 12:35, according to them later. And cell phone data puts her in the area of the high school, not her home. Mm. When she's later asked about this on the stand, she starts crying and talking about how people are harassing her and her family.
Oh, boy. Oh, good grief.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
Weakest thing. Mm-hmm. So according to the PCA and Karen's January 29th interview, she dropped John off, did a 3-point turn to leave, did not see John enter the house, and then went to John's house.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, according to Karen's Dateline episode and her Vanity Fair interview.
Ooh, I got to watch the Dateline.
You're going to hate her. You're going to want to slap
her.
Am
I? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy. Yeah.
I genuinely feel for her, but that does not change the fact that...
That she's a bitch.
Oh, I want to fucking slap her. I want to slap her so fucking hard. Yeah. So she tells Vanity Fair.
Suck that vape.
So this Vanity Fair article was like a huge fucking to-do.
Yeah.
She invites a reporter into her home in Mansfield for the weekend and basically says, "Stay here with me. I'll give you whatever information you fucking want. You'll get my side of the story."
Yeah.
Okay. And the reporter's like, "Say less."
Yeah. Right.
So she tells Vanity Fair that she arrives at the Alberts at 12:20. She says that Jen McCabe relayed the invitation to the Alberts' home to John and Karen, but she's not sure how welcome they were. She at one point wondered if she was at the right address because there were not a lot of cars there and she kind of felt uneasy. So John said that he would get out and check and report back.
Yeah.
Okay. She watched John walk up to the door and almost like he was looking in. Like he pulled the door open a little bit.
Right, right.
Okay. She looked down at her phone and looked up a minute later and he's gone. She waited a minute and expected John to come out or call and he didn't.
Yeah.
So now she's starting to get pissed because she's drunk and she has to pee.
Yeah.
I get it. My dude. Yeah. At that point, I would have been like, I'm going to go in.
Right.
I'm going to go in or I'm going to knock on the neighbor's door. I'm going to go in.
Or I'm just going to do it in the
snow.
I'm
just going to fucking pee my pants right here.
Right.
So we've all been there.
Oh, yeah. I've done it.
So she's getting legitimately fucking irritated right now. She also then realizes that some chick that he used to hook up with before them, apparently a dance instructor of kids like his niece's age.
Yeah.
Lives in the area.
Okay.
So after less than 10 minutes, she's like, fuck you. And she goes to Jen's.
Yeah.
Now, one source stated that she left due to Crohn's related stomach issues that started at the bar earlier. All right. So you got shit. I'd leave too.
Right. Gotta drop a deuce.
If you gotta pee, all right, go knock on their door. But if you gotta shit, you gotta go home.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm not pooping somewhere
I'd be
else.
Texting him, I'm going to shit my pants. Right. You have 4 fucking seconds or you're walking home.
Right.
So she thought really that John was fucking around. Yeah. Not that he at any point in time was physically incapacitated. So I'm going to remind you, this is her interview.
Yeah.
Okay? Kaylee at this point was home alone and she wanted to get home to her, you know.
Yeah.
But she was starting to feel like this was Aruba all over again.
Okay.
I have a few phone data things in here, so I'll throw them out there. Between 12:31 and 12:32, John's cell records him taking 36 steps or traveling 85 feet. At 12:36, Karen's phone connects to John's home Wi-Fi. So that's, they're close.
Yeah.
Okay. At 12:37, now she starts leaving him voicemails and text messages. Karen leaves a voicemail for John saying, quote, John, I fucking hate you. John, I'm going home. You are fucking me right now. You're fucking another girl. Kaylee is sleeping next to me. You're a fucking loser. Fuck yourself.
Ooh.
She mad.
Jeez.
She is mad.
F-bombs everywhere.
Oh, they only get worse.
Jeez.
Yeah. Now, they had to throw in, and she mentioned it in the Vanity Fair article, that later court documents would reveal that the couple exchanged voicemails and text messages showing a possibly strained relationship leading up to the 28th.
Yeah.
Again, I blame COVID.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
Yeah. So at 12:41, according to lead investigator, Massachusetts State Trooper Michael Proctor, king of the twat faces.
Oh, boy.
John's Ring camera. You notice I have all my pages numbered, by the way?
Yeah, good job.
John's Ring camera video shows taillights in the driveway at this time. He speculates that it's Karen's SUV, which would make sense because she hooks up to the Wi-Fi at 12:36.
Yeah, yeah.
He wrote a report specifically about the Ring footage, but does not mention this part at all.
Then why are you writing a fucking report,
this
dude?
Portion of the video is later found to be missing.
Oh, God. One of these cases. Okay. Oh, Jesus.
I'm going to kind of combine some of these phone calls.
Yeah.
At 12:41, John's phone shows 2 missed calls from Jen McCabe. At 12:43, it shows 1 missed call from Jen McCabe. At 12:45, she texts him hello. At 12:46, John's phone shows 3 missed calls from Jen McCabe. So now we're 5 minutes, 6 phone calls.
Wow.
From Jen McCabe.
Wow.
Okay. Karen texts John, quote, I'm going home. The kids are alone. At 12:59, she leaves him a voicemail saying, John, I'm here with your fucking kids. Nobody knows where the fuck you are, you fucking pervert. Nobody knows why she starts calling him a pervert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that about?
I don't know. So at 1 a.m., according to Nicole Albert's statement, everyone is gone from her house by 1 a.m. Not even close.
Mm-hmm.
Not even fucking close. Over the course of the next 11 minutes, Karen will text and call John multiple times. She also attempts to call her parents.
Wow. Okay.
Now, when I'm in a fucking tizzy and I want to yell at somebody, I'm going to call my mom.
Yeah.
She's going to encourage me.
Yeah, true.
So, yeah. I mean, you know how she is. That I'm going to call her. So, I'm either going to call her or Kelly. Like, what the fuck? You know?
Right. Yeah.
So, she doesn't end up talking to him. But she then continues to leave John voicemails and text messages She's going home. Basically, I'm with your kids. I'm going home. You're fucking another woman. Okay. At 1:30 a.m., according to Sergeant Lank's report, this is when Jen McCabe said her and Matt leave the Alberts. This is also not correct. A later statement says that she gave Julie Nagel a ride home. Okay. Mm-hmm. However, according to her January 29th interview, she didn't mention giving anyone a ride home and that she left the Alberts at 1:30 and went straight home. On her February 1st interview, Jen says she left at 1:30 and she drove Julie Nagel and Sarah Levinson home. The report stated, though, that the McCabes were at the Alberts from 11:45 to 1:45. We know that's not true because right. they left the bar. It could be a typo. Who knows?
Yeah.
At 1:43, Julie Nagel will later testify that at this time she saw a, quote, black blob on the front lawn as they drove away. She says this out loud. Sarah asks what it is. Julie says she doesn't know. Sergeant Lank's report doesn't mention anyone else leaving the house.
Okay.
Which means it doesn't mention Colin ever leaving the house because yeah. it doesn't mention Colin ever being at the house. He's not in any of the reports.
Wow. Okay.
At 1:30, according to grand jury testimony and later reports, this is the time that Higgins leaves the Alberts to go to Canton PD to do some administrative work.
What?
So they were out of town all day at a line of duty death funeral.
Yeah.
And then they were drinking. Now he's going to go do some administrative work.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me.
Higgins would later testify he left the Alberts at between 12:30 and 1 o'clock to go to the PD to move work vehicles to the center of the lot for the snowplows in anticipation of the storm.
Good. So you've been drinking and now you're going to be driving.
Well, they all are. He, at the time, is in his personal Jeep with a plow attached to it. And when he goes to work, he goes to Canton PD to switch all the vehicle, to move the vehicles, he switches to a work vehicle. Another source says that he left the Alberts at 12:40. Mm-hmm. Caitlin Albert testified that he left much later. Again, Sergeant Lank's report says that Caitlin left at 12:15. So how would she know this? Others say that Higgins was the second last to leave. And Higgins would testify later, quote, I kind of knew from the onset when I got there, it probably wasn't going to be a long time because I'm not a beer drinker and that's what they had.
Okay.
He would also deny ever going upstairs. That's important to note.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll pin that.
This is also speculated that this is the time he went to Canton PD to get a Faraday bag.
I don't know what the fuck that is.
It's a bag to put in a cell phone, to put a cell phone in to block navigation and stuff.
No shit.
Yeah. It's alleged that's when he went to the PD to grab this bag.
Yeah.
To move John's phone.
Oh.
Okay. Now, at 1:30, surveillance video at the PD shows Higgins entering Canton PD with their key system. So he says he left there between 12:30 and 1. It's a 5-minute drive from the PD to the Alberts. I Googled it. So if he left at 12:30, where the fuck were you for an hour?
Right.
Where were you?
What the fuck is that about?
At approximately 1:45, Tristan Morris arrives at Fairview to pick up Caitlin. This is when she says she left, and she would later testify that she didn't see anything on the lawn as she left. At 1:47 a.m., according to cell phone data, this is when the McCabes actually leave the Alberts.
Yeah.
Now, Nicole Albert says that everybody is gone by 1 a.m.
Yeah, right.
Okay. At 2 a.m., Brian Lucky Loughran arrives at Canton Public Works to start his snowplow shift.
Okay.
He's a 35-year resident of Canton. He has known the Albert family the entire time. His brother is on the board of selectmen with Chris Albert, and he actually graduated high school with Chris and then worked with him for a bit.
Yeah.
The Alberts always teased him for being slow, but then they, quote, accepted him as one of their own.
Yeah.
So they were friends.
Yeah.
This guy's the MVP.
Okay.
Of the trial, eventually.
Okay, good.
At 12, or excuse me, at 2:12, according to cell phone data, this is when the McCabes finally arrive home. They both said in statements that they got home after 2.
Right.
At 2:15, Lucky leaves the plow yard to start his route. He's been driving the same route for 3 years.
Yeah.
Okay? This poor guy. At 2:22, Higgins receives a one-second phone call from Brian Albert. Higgins calls back 17 seconds later, and they have another 22-second phone call. He denies ever making these phone calls or talking to Brian Albert. Brian Albert denies making these phone calls or talking to Higgins. Mm. Both men would say that these calls were, quote, butt dials.
Butt dials. Oh, boy.
Again, around this time, he's allegedly...
Put it in a different pocket.
He's at the PD.
Right.
Getting that Faraday back. Okay, this is a big one. The search. You ready? Right.
And I think after this, we should wrap it up.
Yes. Because
this has been a lot of
information. I'll let you guys chew on this one.
Yeah, this has been a lot of info.
This is, if they can prove that this search, well, they have proved it, that this particular search was done at this particular time, done.
Okay.
At 2:27 a.m., Jen McCabe searches on her cell phone, Haas Long to die in cold. Obviously, it's supposed to be how long, but it's H-O-S.
Yeah.
She denies making the search at this time. Two digital forensic experts testified for the prosecution, saying that McCabe opened a search tab at 2:27 a.m. to search for Hockomock Sports, which is her kids' league.
Okay.
The timestamp is from the opening of the tab, not the actual search.
Okay, yeah.
It's not how it works, though.
Right.
Defense expert says otherwise, and that the search, among other things, was deleted.
Mm.
Jen McCabe denied deleting the search, but it also comes out that she denied almost every interaction on her phone.
Yeah.
For a very long window of time.
Yeah.
After this happened. Let me get through the Vanity Fair thing. In the
Okay.
Vanity Fair asked, you met Karabiak, and he actually would go on record with this. He's a PhD at Purdue's Department of Computer and Information Technology, who specializes in iPhone artifacts and the limitation of digital forensics. Mm. Jesus fuck.
Holy shit, dude.
I am a stupid fucking paramedic.
Right.
They asked him to evaluate the prosecution's expert testimony and an affidavit from the defense's expert, Richard Green. He says, quote, based on my research and experience, I concur with what I see in the affidavit from Richard Green.
Ooh.
Although the browser tab was opened earlier than the searches, quote, the timestamp for the search items is recorded for searches and stored in the database, not the time of the opening.
Oh.
So the prosecution is saying it was the tab that was opened at 2:27.
Yeah, yeah.
The defense and an independent person is saying, no,
no.
That's when it was searched.
Right.
So we'll stop there because then it gets into Lucky and this poor fuck can't tell time. And
there's been so much information. Yeah. Like now, if you keep going further, like I'm going to start getting lost.
So if you have any questions about this part, shoot Mark a message and he'll shoot it to me.
Yeah.
I have a couple things written up with like names and stuff.
You should post it on Patreon.
Yeah. And well, I'll have you do it. I also have a spreadsheet of phone calls.
Oh, cool.
So I can show you what time all the phone calls happened and how many were deleted and everything like that.
Oh,
instead
geez.
Of going through times by, you know,
yeah.
the phone call at this time and this time and this time. I'll just post it.
Okay.
I did lump them together. It'll say like, you know, 6 phone calls were done, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, okay. I know that's a lot.
This has been a lot.
Yeah.
But wow, what a fucking case.
It only
holy
goes
shit.
Downhill from here.
Dude.
Yeah.
My
and I'll
God.
Leave you with this little tidbit.
Yeah.
Just 4 days ago, I think now,
mm-hmm.
Lead investigator, State Trooper Michael Proctor,
mm-hmm.
was dishonorably fired from the Massachusetts State Police.
No shit.
Because of his testimony.
No way.
Yeah. Oh, he fucked up bad.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I fucking hate bad cops.
Well, you probably shouldn't text your friends that you're looking at a defendant's phone for nudes.
Oh, dude, what are you doing?
Oh, it's bad.
What are you doing?
It's pretty fucking bad.
All right. Well, thank you so much for digging into this case. It's going to be a couple parts.
Yeah. Oh, know? Yeah.
So, guys, just strap in. I hope you enjoyed the first episode.
I'm going to try and get that stuff posted on Patreon as soon as I can. I'm on a 36 starting tomorrow.
Yeah.
So if I don't get it done then, I'm at the firehouse the day after that. So
yeah,
I'll get it up there.
Okay. But, sounds good.
It'll all be handwritten because, you know, I don't fucking type shit.
And God, it's chicken scratch.
No, it's my handwriting.
Okay, bubbly.
You can read my fucking handwriting. It's shut up, bubbly. It's not chicken scratch.
It's bubbly. God. All right, thank you guys for listening. And
I forgot I had a fucking monster in front of me.
Yeah.
I'm still focused.
Right. All right, thank you guys for listening, and we will be talking to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, stain, tools, flooring, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online from May 8th through May 14th. Not a member? Join My Lowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's. We help. You save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.